Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
The lovely Francil Garwin, who you can find on her website. I think it's francil.com, which is F-R-A-N-C-Y-L. Welcome to The Cosmic Citizen. This is Andre Traversa and my partner in crime here, Paula Thompson. How are you, Paula?
I'm great. How are you, Andre?
You're in snowy Colorado, right?
Snowy Colorado, and looking out the window and snowflakes are drifting down amidst the colorful leaves. It's pretty spectacular, really.
Wow. Well, I'm in cold and damp Chicago. Well, this way, I want to get right to our show this morning because we have a really special show today. It's one that I'm just really looking forward to that I think will inspire and edify our listeners in a way that I think I don't know if we'll be able to top this one. This is a, you know, remember there's some books that came out in the late 80s, early 90s called Chicken Soup for the Soul. This book that we're about to talk about is, I call it Chicken Soup for the Spirit. That's not really the name of it, but it's really in sort of the same vein, but just done so well. And I want to introduce our guest right away. Our guest is Jennifer Skiff, who comes to us from Maine. She is a former CNN anchor or correspondent, and she is the author of a book called God Stories. And basically what we're going to do today is we're going to listen to people's God stories. Hopefully people will call in and give their testimonies about what God has done in their life. Jennifer, welcome to The Cosmic Citizen.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're quite welcome. I don't even know, you know, where to start. I guess maybe let's just start a little bit about yourself. You were a former correspondent for CNN, and you kind of have your own God story. We probably have several, but there's one that you talk about in your book in particular at the beginning of your book. Can you kind of recap that for us a little bit?
Well, the real epiphany for me, and, you know, I describe a God story in this book as the moment you receive personal proof that there's more, that God or a divine power exists. So that's the stipulation for people having submitted stories for this book, just so everybody's aware. My real epiphany came at 32 years old. I was working for CNN. I was thriving professionally, traveling the world, doing these great stories. But personally, I was very, very unhappy. And I was married for the second time, and for the second time, I was already talking about getting a divorce. And so personally, I felt I was a failure. So despite what I was doing professionally, it didn't really matter if you're unhappy, you know. So around this time, I started experiencing a pain in my right knee. I went to a bunch of doctors. Everyone said it was tennis knee. I finally landed at Mass General in Boston, where they said, you have a tumor in your bone marrow. You're going to need to be operated on. when I was operated on, I woke up and the doctor told me, we've kept your leg, but only temporarily. You do, in fact, have bone cancer. It was malignant. And at that moment, at that very moment, I thought, well, good. You know, let's go. Let's get out of here. I've lived a million lives already. I've traveled the world. I've seen everything. I'm out. And all of a sudden, in the next couple of days, as I waited for the final DNA results to come back and chemotherapy to begin, I can only describe it as I was engulfed by a warm blanket of love from people who I knew and didn't expect it from, and also people who I didn't know, people who said that they were praying for me. And at the time I thought, well, that's nice. I didn't really get, you know, the big picture. And by the fourth day, fifth day, I was sitting in my hospital bed still. I felt better. I felt better about myself. I felt I had been told by other people that I did have a purpose and that I had affected them in a positive way. And then my doctor came running into my room 6 o'clock in the morning, and he threw his hands up in the air, and he said, I'm going to tell you something I never get to tell anybody. I said, what's that? He said, your DNA results just came back. It's benign. And I said, benign? I said, what am I supposed to do? And he said, young lady, go out and live your life.
Wow.
And it was profound for me. It was profound. And what was profound was not only that this diagnosis had changed, but that in a period of 4 days, my attitude about myself and my self-worth on this planet had changed dramatically as well. And I will tell you, I'm now 48, and I never looked back. You know, I've just never looked back from that moment. I got it. A lot of people have those experiences when they have a catastrophic illness where they get it. But for me, that was my big moment.
You know, I have to say I love, that's, you know, such an amazing story and such a poignant, sweet story. And I've heard all kinds of God stories like you. I know I probably can't top you because I know you have a website and people send them to you all the time. But I think you'll be glad to know, Jennifer, that the group that we have listening on the board today and many of the people that tune into our show every week have expressed to me often similar stories, and they've had epiphany moments, so they completely understand what it means to be touched in the moment by God and to know, to experience the reality of God and the goodness of God and the caring of God and, you know, the fact that we live in a friendly and well-ordered universe and that we are beloved children of an infinite creator. So I think you're in really good company today, Jennifer.
Well, that's fantastic. And, you know, it is nice to know, you know, I was not a person who used to use the word God. I didn't want my belief system to affect anyone else. I have to say that's changed. But it is nice to know, and I think compiling this book taught me this, and it's from the emails that I get from people, it's helping people everywhere kind of come out of the closet, if you will, in accepting that, yes, I've had an experience too, but I didn't dare to talk about it. I didn't dare to openly express my opinion about it. And it is really nice to know that we're moving forward and letting people know that it's just not biblical times where God spoke to people or God or divine power let people know she was out there. It's happening every day, and it's happening a lot. And if you open yourself up to receiving, you could be directed a lot, and it's a wonderful thing.
Well, and I think, too, Jennifer, well, first of all, before I make my next point, I want to make sure we give our phone a route because I want to make sure we get as many calls in as possible today. If you have your God stories, please call in. That's what the whole purpose of the show is going to be. It's going to be for people to be able to share their stories. I want us to give people that opportunity. Our phone number is 646-716-8158. That's 646-716-8158. Jennifer, you know, you mentioned the fact that you didn't want to let your belief system affect anybody else. That's very common today. You know, there are a lot of people like, oh, I don't want to offend people. I don't want to talk, you know, we shouldn't talk about politics and religion. Don't you find, though, especially with your website, godstories.com, which I want to mention for people who want to post their stories, don't you think that there's a real hunger out there that people want to talk about God?
I do now. I didn't even think about it before this book was out there and I started searching. But one thing I've found that is quite profound is that people want confirmation and they want reaffirmation. And hearing other people's stories helps other people. If you have a story, if you share it, you are inevitably helping someone else on their spiritual journey. And that's one thing that I've found that's been really enlightening through the whole process.
Well, and you had pointed out in your book that some, like your own husband, then shared a God story with you that he had never shared with you before. So in a way,
reluctantly,
you gave him permission to share. I think that, you know, you probably had a great deal of insights from hearing all of these stories, and I imagine that your ideas about God changed quite a bit after hearing and reading all of these stories. But, you know, it's just amazing that there's a thread that goes through there, and one of the threads is people are often afraid to admit to anyone their God story for fear that they'll be called, quote-unquote, crazy.
Well, especially, you know, this is a funny story, but when I started collecting the stories, I set up the website, godstories.com, and then I started doing media and telling people, look, if you've got a story, I'm doing this book, you know, go ahead and submit. And, you know, the first story that came in, every morning, you know, I'd go to my computer and I'd look at the stories that came in overnight. They were quite overwhelming, but the first one that came in about hearing God's voice, I thought, oh, that's nice. And then, you know, a week later, another one came in. Well, you know, I heard this voice, and I turned around, and there was no one there, and, you know, it changed my life at that moment. And I said, that's a bit spooky. Well, after about the 30th, the story that came in, I thought, oh, wow. You know, people are actually hearing an audible voice, and it's usually at a moment that it protects them. You know, someone's about ready to step off a train. They hear someone say, don't jump. They turn around, there's no one in the carriage, and then an express train goes, you know, in front of their face. And these are normal people. And at first I was like, freaky, you know, oh, this must be the crazy bunch that I'm going to get. And now I've got a whole chapter, because they're not. And I think it is natural for people to have this inclination that this just can't be. This just can't be. But I've even, to help people with the credibility factor, I even said to my contributor, send me your pictures. I'll put your pictures up on the internet so that people can read the story. And then they can go into my contributor gallery and they can see, look, this person looks like, you know, your best friend who submitted the story. So, you know, hopefully it's more reinforcing for people.
Well, you know, and it's funny you should say that, Jennifer, because we're talking about the reinforcing thing, because there's a quote from the Arantia book which says, and I'm paraphrasing, but it says basically that it says arguments for the existence of God are not meant for the conversion of non-believers; they're meant for the edification of other believers. And you know, I think the same probably could be said for God stories. Although I think if you're sharing a God story, may actually persuade someone who doesn't believe in God more sometimes than a logical argument would.
Well, there are a lot of people who sit on the fence, and they have emailed me and said, I've been everything from, you know, I grew up this way, but I've never really believed, and this story confirmed something for me, thank you. Or I get emails that say, I lost my way, and I'm back on my spiritual journey after reading this book. You know, I have recovered alcoholics, people who are recovering, or drug addicts, and say, you know, I was about ready to fall right off the wagon. I was sure I was going that way, and I read this book, and one story just appealed to my heart, and now I know that I know that I know. And
so they can have a kind of a vicarious experience, is what you're saying, through the
book. Pardon me?
They can have a kind of vicarious experience through the book.
Of the story.
You know, in other words.
Yeah.
You know, they may not directly experience the story. You know, they didn't directly experience the story, but it that it they can have an kind of an indirect epiphany. You know?
Well,
I love the fact that you included such a great cross section of humanity. I mean, what comes to mind is, you know, there's the mom with her little children, and she's, you know, the obvious devoted mother soccer mom, and then there's the guy, the drug addict who's been on crack cocaine for 20 years, and in total denial, living in a tenement abandoned building without utilities or plumbing or anything, and goes into a total drug crazed stupor and passes out and wakes up 2 days later to get up and look at himself in a cracked mirror that wasn't even there before. And goes through this whole ritual where he undresses and looks at himself like he's seeing himself for the first time. And he's seeing what he's doing to himself. And then the mirror just goes away. Mm-hmm. You know?
And he walks out the door and becomes a social worker.
Right.
After 22 years.
Hmm. I can see how many people of all stripes could get something for them. And I think that's so important because God, you know, what it tells us is God reaches us no matter where we are. You know, if we want to be reached, we're the ones that open the door and say, okay, I'm ready, here I am, you know, and he'll go as low as he has to go, you know, if we are willing at all. And I have a question, though, that kind of came to me while I was reading this, and I know that I said earlier you probably had lots of epiphanies about God while you were collecting all these stories and editing them and interviewing people. What are some of the major, you know, ways in which your ideas about God changed when you through this project?
Well, I've always had, since I was probably about 20, 21, where I actually, you know, asked for God's help, asked God to come into my life, asked Christ to come into my life. From that moment on, I've always had a personal relationship. But what it did do for me, I've just never been a personally very trusting person. I've never really trusted people. I trust every animal on the face of the earth, but not people. And this opened up for me a whole new realm of humanity and goodness in people. It's kind of hard to explain. Another thing, is it God or is it I became much more compassionate. Not just toward animals, but to other people. And I began to see clearly that everyone has a path and that judgment, no matter how small, is just detrimental to yourself. Mm-hmm. So if you can look at the person who's angry with you and say, why, you will benefit from that, but not by judging them or letting their anger affect you. So there were, you know, that's God. In and of itself, these things, and that's pretty much what has happened to me.
Wow, I mean, who can argue with that? It's like there's nothing. It's like all you can do is say amen, you know, to that. It's like that, you know, that's too powerful for words. You know, Paula, do we have any calls yet?
Not yet.
Okay, I want to give out our number again: 646-716-8158. Please call in. Please feel free to share your God stories. That's what this show is about today. And I want to give people as much opportunity as possible to do that. You know, it reminds me again, it's funny, Paul's the one who usually quotes the Urantia book, but I'm going to give a couple of other, because what you've shared reminds me so much of a passage that's a favorite of so many readers, Jennifer. It's in a paper called Religion and Human Experience. The section is called Problems of Growth. And it says if someone irritates you, causes feelings of resentment, it says you should sympathetically try to discern his viewpoint, you know, his motivations for such objectionable conduct. And that's what you're saying. You say you ask why the person's angry. You don't judge. And then there's a great metaphor they give of a caveman. They say, you know, imagine one of your primitive cave-dwelling ancestors who's, you know, filthy and he smells bad and he's, you know, I mean, I'm paraphrasing here, but, you know, and you might look at him and say, oh, that's disgusting. You know, he's got a club in his hand, you know, and he's got an expression of rage and hate on his face. But then, you know, if you enlarge the picture, you see, in front of him is a saber-toothed tiger, and behind him is a woman and two children. You know, so you, that gives you, and it says that there you see the beginnings of something, you know, divine and noble in the human race. And I think, you know, I believe that that's why God is able to forgive us, because God understands us completely, and God sees the whole picture. You know, God sees the saber-toothed tiger and the two children. You know, so I just your comment there, it just really made me think about that.
Well, you know, and what occurs to me as I was reading your book is you don't, some of the people mention what particular faith persuasion they are. But when you get to this level of faith, it really doesn't matter.
No, it really doesn't.
And I was touched by that, because I thought, you know, it's important. It's important to point out that God reaches us wherever we are, no matter what church we go to, no matter what book we read, no matter what faith we subscribe to. If we reach out to Him, you know, He answers the attitude of the longing of our souls. He is, you know, the Father of spirits, the Creator of the greatest reality in all of creation, the only reality that continues on eternally, and that is the spiritual aspect of each one of us. And that is what's eternal and about us. And so that's what touched me, as I thought, you know, and I thought probably you came away with this feeling, well, you know, there is no right religion or no wrong religion. There's only faith in God, that faith transcends belief. Would you say that's true, Jennifer? Did you end up feeling that way?
I did. I mean, it's a funny thing how this just unfolded, but I am a journalist by trade, and so it was important for me to document all faiths, all colors of people. What are you feeling about this? Are you having a God story? And, you know, when you stick to the facts, did you have a God story? What's your God story? And I did ask people, and you don't see this in the book, but I asked every person, everyone has to fill out a little questionnaire, you know, did you have a faith? Do you have a faith now? What is it? Some I let slip in because I wanted people to know, well, you know, this person's studying for their bat mitzvah, okay? So you know they're Jewish, or they grew up, or somebody's drowning and they say, Mary, Jesus, Joseph, and, you know, what's that? My grandmother used to say it. They grew up Catholic. And so I slipped a few in there because I wanted people to know these are of all faiths, and the documentation proves that people of all faiths, all cultures, all colors are having similar experiences with an entity that they call God or a divine power, or in some cases it's an energy. It's actually, some people are very scientific about it. They're like, I know it's an energy, I call it an energy. So it's been very fun. It's been fun to document.
Well, and each person is so different that their experience of whatever it is would be different. You know, I mean, that makes perfect sense to me.
You know, I got to read about 100 pages of your book, Jennifer, and there's a part, I was just wondering, I think there's a chapter in there about guardian angels or something, because I was going to ask you, a lot of what you're talking about reminds me, you know, there've been a lot of books about people having experiences with angels. Did you get that from people, too, saying that, well, I didn't think it was God, but it was an angel? Did you get that, too?
I got that from some stories, but my directive clearly was to stay away from the angel element, in that, you know, because not everyone, you know, I wanted to just focus on God, the moment of God. But what I did find was that I did the whole chapter. I didn't call it anything about angels, but there was a whole chapter where people described another human being intercepting in their life in a moment and changing their life in that exact moment, touching them and taking all their despair away or preventing something tragic from happening. I couldn't help but call that, you know, basically, I think my first title for that chapter was A Stranger's Intervention. Some people would call it angels. You know, people on earth who are there to protect you. And I'm just now starting to read up a little bit on things like that. I purposely stayed away from it at the beginning. if you know what I mean.
Well, you know, I know, Andre, you probably have angel stories and God stories, and I know I do. And really, I feel like my life is a God story. I can look back over my life and see where God intervened and helped me through something. My whole life, I mean, at every age, I can come back to a time when I prayed with sincerity and earnest prayer, and my prayer was answered. And so, you know, and one just comes to mind. I'll share one is one of my favorites. And it obviously changed my life. And interestingly enough, and I think this is probably a pattern you saw as you collected all your stories too, I saw it in your book somewhat, people get to a crossroads in their life. And it's usually there at a crisis, a huge crisis, like a health crisis or a life and death situation. And they pray in that moment. And oftentimes it's the worst that could happen, but it ends up being the best that could happen. It's the blessing in disguise because it changes everything. The moment that God intervenes changes everything. And for me, it was when I was 20 years old, and I lost my dad. He was 59 and I was 20. And he was my hero. He was my best friend. He was the one person in the world that could make me feel like everything was going to be okay. No matter what crisis I went through, if I talked it over with him, he reassured me. He was my counselor. He was the person that helped me. He was my biggest fan, the one that believed in me. And so to lose him right at that stage in my life where I was just beginning to discover him, that he wasn't just my dad, he was funny and witty and wise and clever, and I wanted to know what he thought about things that we'd never talked about before. I couldn't wait to get to know him in a different way, as an adult to an adult. I was really looking forward to that. I was just discovering that, and he was taken away. And he really was like this for everybody in my family. I mean, we all loved him the same way. He was so important, and like so often you don't realize what you got or how much it means until it's gone. And so I went into this odyssey of grief with the rest of my family. We were all grieving so bad. We couldn't comfort each other. It felt like the lights went out. We were all numb with grief. It was just indescribable. I've never experienced anything like it before nor since. And my heart literally felt like it was dying. I'm a normally positive and optimistic person, and I just felt like, what's the point, you know? I felt like I'll never smile again. It just felt like that. And I can honestly say I grieved for probably 2 years. For 2 years, I couldn't think about him without crying. But in the midst of this, and he died right before Christmas, and in the midst of this horrible grief that I was going through, probably a month into it, I prayed to God, and I said, and I kept hearing this voice again in the back of my head saying, you got to find the good news. And I thought, okay, I've got to find the good news. Somehow I've got to find the good news. And so I went to the Bible because everybody said it was there. I mean, that's where else would I go? I'm Christian. I was raised a Christian as a child. My parents quit going to church when I was pretty young, but I had a deep faith in God, a deep faith in Jesus, angels, all my life, like I said, I'd always had it. So I thought, well, maybe the answers I'm looking for are in the Bible, and I will go there and find them. And I knew very specifically that I wanted to know where my dad was. I wanted to know where he was, and I wanted real assurance that he still was. And I went to the Bible three different times on three occasions, and I couldn't find the comfort I was looking for, and I think my need was just too great at the time. And the third time I decided I'd read it from cover to cover, and I got to the Gats. And I thought, oh, this is not what I need, and I just was so frustrated, and I threw the book down, and I just started to sob. And I told God, it's not here. It's what I'm looking for is not here. You have to give me the good news, or I'm going to lose my mind. And within days, my first husband, who was incarcerated at the time, for possession, called me up and said, "When you come to visit on Saturday, will you bring some money for this book?" And I said, "Well, what book?" He said, "Well, it's this spiritual book that I'm reading. It's really amazing, and somebody let me borrow it, but I'd like to have one of my own, and they've started a study group here, and I want to read it." And I said, "Well, what's it called?" He said, "It's called The Urantia Book." And he wanted $12.50 for it, and I thought, well, gee, that was a lot of money for me, 20 with a little baby, and I'm trying to hold our lives together. But I did bring him the $12.50, and I purchased it. The bottom line of the story was, the book answered my questions in ways that I never dreamed possible. And from the moment I picked it up and started to read it, I knew it was the answer to my prayer. And, you know, and that's a very powerful thing.
Yeah.
To know that your prayer has been answered. You know, it's the promise of Jesus that if we seek, we will be answered. And the door will be opened unto us if we knock. We initiate it, but then the answer is coming. So,
but I find that sometimes God initiates as well. I mean, I don't really have anything more to say about that except that I find that God initiates as well. That sometimes, you know, he'll give us a sign before we even are looking.
That's a good point, Andre. I think that's true, especially if you really believe in God, too. Well, we have a caller.
Great.
Hello, caller. Hello? You're on Thought Talk, the Cosmic Citizen.
Hi, this is Warren Boomshuka from the chat room.
Hi, Warren. I'm glad you called.
Yeah, me too.
Do you have a story?
Yeah, I do. I actually had a best friend when I was about 20, and he was going through a tough time, and it got worse and worse, and I'm like, geez, you know, I think something really bad is going to happen with him. And so I just prayed to God, and I'm like, you know what, I tried helping him out, and, you know, I told his family what I thought, you know, that he's going downhill, and they kind of brushed it off, so I said, you know what, I'm just going to pray, and hopefully something happens. So I was just praying and praying, and all of a sudden, my eardrum blasted open, and it just sounded like I could hear into, like, a seashell.
Wow.
It was really cool. And then all of a sudden, I just heard this voice, and it's like, hello? And I'm like, hi. He's like, how are you doing? And I was, like, shocked. And I'm like, well, I'm doing fine, thank you. And he said, yeah, I'm just helping someone right now. And he was so charming. And I just laughed. And I was like, and he said, so how are you doing this? And I'm like, I have no idea. And he's like, well, do you have any questions for me? And I'm like, well, what am I good at? And he said, quick healing and movement. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then he asked me, he asked me if I had any other questions. And I said, well, what, I don't know why I asked this, but I said, what soul group am I? And he's like, Jor-El. And I'm like, what? Superman's dad? I don't get that. And then he said he was going to make himself somewhat visible to me. And I freaked out and I just ended it. I'm like, that's scary. It just scared me so much. And I actually looked up that word Jor-El and it's, the etymology of it, and it said God will save, and now I'm like, oh, okay, I felt a little bit better about what that meant. And then the next day I tried doing the same thing. I just meditated and I was praying, and my eardrum just blasted open, and it was like a seashell, and I could hear this loud, like, it was like a booming voice from, like, heaven. I swear, it was just so loud. And I, like, and he just came through again laughing, and I said, who's this? And he's like, and he just told me his name was Benjamin, and he's like, oh, my God, I can't believe you're doing this. I'm like, well, isn't it evolution? And he's like, not exactly, and laughed. And then he's like, yeah, I can't, he's like, it's miraculous that you're doing this and that you could believe without seeing. And I'm like, yeah, I guess. I thought, like, other people can do it too, and it happens quite a bit. And he's like, not exactly. And then he asked me, he's like, is there anything at all you want to know? Like, do you have any questions? And I'm like, yeah, how do we evolve? And he just laughed, like, oh my God, I can't believe you asked me such a simple question. And he's like, well, you can do anything, go outside, live your life, meet people. I'm like, yeah, I guess. And then that ended. And I never really shared that, those two stories with anyone, because I'm like, you know, that's just, it doesn't make sense. Like, it doesn't
sound
right.
Lori, let me ask you, what happened to your friend?
Oh, he actually did kill himself only a couple weeks later. And I wasn't going to share him the story because his mind was so in such a weird place that I thought, oh, my God, like, if I told him such a crazy story, I don't know. I thought, you know, if he was stable that I could share a story like that. But he was really, really unstable. And, yeah, he did kill himself. And that was really, really hard. But at least I had that memory of what happened right before that.
And so it proved to you that God exists. That
yeah. Mm. And my motive going into it was like, you know what, maybe if I pray hard enough and get some response that I could share that with him, because he was a guy who had lost faith, but he had a lot of it. And I was going to tell him my story eventually, but he passed away. And I was too afraid to share it to him because he was such a... I mean, I don't even share the story to anyone anyways, but...
Warren, let me ask you something, and I'm saying this, and please, I hope, you know, I don't, you know, get offended by this question, because it's not, I don't think this at all, okay, because I'm a believer in God, a strong believer in God. What would you say to somebody who says, well, yeah, you just had a nice hallucination, you know, or whatever, you know, what would you say to them?
Yeah, and I mean, like, that's why I don't share the story, but I know one of the things for me, I mean, even just a conversation with Uriel, he said the Jor-El thing. I'm like, in my head, like, I knew that would, like, that didn't make any sense to me. I thought, you know, that's maybe Superman's dad from the comic books. And then I look up the etymology of it, like, how, you know, Chris Hobson will look up the etymology of a word, and it's like completely fits with what he was saying about someone's soul, like, God will uplift. Like, I had no clue of what that. I'd never heard that term before in my life.
May I ask a question? How old are you?
I'm just about to turn 24 in a week.
And how old were you when this happened?
About 20.
And so it's been 4 years, but you profoundly remember everything that was said.
Oh, yeah.
And see, that to me is indicative of what other people experience with a God story as well, is like... how is it that, you know, if you have a dream, you don't remember the dream?
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly, you don't.
But when people have a God story, I mean, you've just explained not just one experience, but you had several, you know, a couple where you had the same thing happen, you were meditating, you were asking for help, you received an answer in a way, you received personal proof. And that's what I find amazing from these stories, is that how do you explain away the fact that you remember it and you remember a whole conversation?
And also, let me just jump in and say this. I think for people who say to you, Warren, I can understand why you wouldn't want to share with people who may think, oh, you know, you were just having a hallucination. But what that overlooks is it overlooks the fruits of the experience. You know, like, what did that experience do in your life? Did it turn you into a more loving person? Did it?
What it did is, like, what I brought out of that was I couldn't believe that, you know, in my complete outlook towards deity, God, etc., I didn't know that they're that charming and that funny, like, and that completely reshaped my entire idea of God, of deity, of all these things, because I was laughing, like I was crying with laughter. That's how hilarious and charming the experience of these personalities was to me. Like, I had never laughed so hard in my life. They were trying to make me, like, cheer me up. And I guess, like, you could say, like, oh yeah, it was a hallucination, but the fact that I can still remember the conversation, like, really clearly, and it's just, it's just one of those things you know in your heart you experienced, and it doesn't really matter even if no one were to believe you anyways, because it's like, it was such a real experience for me that, you know what, it's cool. Like, it gave me that, like,
I know,
for sure.
I have people many times that when I'm talking to God and I say a prayer or I have a thought about God in my life, and it's almost like a super lucidity. It's such a sincere soul quest, and I remember exactly what I prayed and exactly what I thought. And you know, it's there again, when you can go back to a moment that you remember exactly what you thought. You know that was a super conscious moment, and the Urantia book talks about super consciousness. It says that, you know, we have a subconscious, a conscious, and a super conscious. And the mind is in the conscious level, and the body is in it rests between the super conscious and the subconscious. And it's like the bridge between both. And it's always amazing to me when somebody relates an experience like what you've just done, and probably I have some Celtic friends that would tell you, well, you're clairaudient, you know. They would have a word for it. They would know exactly what you experienced. But then, you know, as a result of a sincere prayer, and then we immediately, I don't mean to generalize by saying we, but there are folks who will immediately try to discount that experience as a hallucination, or just this, or just that, and not real, even though it came as a result of a sincere quest or prayer.
Yeah.
And that always amazes me.
Well, you know what's amazing, excuse me for interrupting, but people ask me all the time, well, what do you say about those people who are skeptics, who don't believe? And you know what I say? Who cares?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It actually does not matter, because you've just had a personal experience. That personal experience has changed your life, because now you're at peace. You know that there's more. You know that when you pass, you're going somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
You also know that there is someone
guiding
you all the way along. If you want to be a good person, you want to stay on the straight and narrow, if you want to have a good life, someone is guiding you.
Yeah.
To the skeptics, well, I'm sorry you haven't experienced it, but it doesn't really matter what you think. Who cares?
Yeah, it was so fun that, like, you know, I'd pay, like, a lot of money for that just to happen and no one know. Like, I don't care. Like, it was just so fun that, I mean, you could have it to yourself your whole life, and it's, you know, I'd pay money for that to happen again.
Well, you know what, it's funny what you're talking about, Warren, that reminds me of I don't know if you've heard of the tradition of a Sufi mystical tradition. The Sufis talk about God being playful and laughing and being like a clown.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, it's funny, that is what reminded me of when you were talking about that. You know, Jennifer, you're so right. I so agree with what you're saying about how the experience transcends. It's like the experience transcends any argument against it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's really, and you know, there's a, and I don't mean to criticize anybody's religion here, but let me ask you a question, Jennifer. In the Urantia book, we have a, it talks about how there are three kinds of religion. There's a religion of fear, the religion of authority, and the religion of the spirit. And the religion of the spirit being the highest one, according to the book. And do you find that when people have these kinds of experiences, do you find that like you said, for example, that you know that when you pass, you're going to go somewhere. Do you find that when people have these kinds of experiences, that it maybe not completely abolishes, but it really reduces the amount of fear in their lives?
Absolutely. I mean, I had a, you know, I have a story that I tell in the book where I was 12, and it was my 12th birthday, and I was given a 10-speed bike, and my mother said, you can ride here, and you can ride there, but don't ride out on the main road. Well, of course, I was out on the main road before you know it, and I was gliding along, and all of a sudden, I felt the only word, the two words I can describe it, perpetual euphoria. I felt absolutely wonderful. I felt like I was rolling. I remember rolling, but I felt beautiful. I just unbelievable feeling. And then I looked down. And as I looked down, it appeared that I was about 20 feet in the air. And I looked down at a VW Volkswagen with a cracked windshield, with a wig of hair in the windshield, and there was a body in front of the car. And I just still felt absolutely wonderful, and I watched as people got out of cars, traffic stopped, people went to this body, and all of a sudden, I realized the body was mine. And that moment that I was no longer above, I was back in my body, the pain had started, and that was like this moment. I was 12. I had never heard stories about out-of-body experiences. I never knew. The moment I had that experience at 12 years old, I never feared death. I still don't fear death. I know my soul is leaving. So yeah, I mean every time someone has an experience, fear is it an evil? Probably not, but it is probably the worst thing in a person's life to have is to live with constant fear about things. It really brings you down. And when you don't fear death, when you know that there's more, you're not sure exactly what that more is, but you know there's more, it's a huge relief. And, you know, another thing I wanted to say is, you know, I did find in writing God stories that when people have experiences, God or the divine may present himself in a way that people can relate to. For instance, someone of the Baha'i Now faith may see a man with a turban at the end of his bed, of his vision, because that's something he can relate to. Someone else may see, if they see a vision, they may see Christ, or they may see the only feet, but that those feet have nails or nail holes in them. So they understand it because it's Christ. And what Warren's saying is, you know, maybe the divine presents himself in a way where that Warren can understand, hey, I'm a nice guy, I can laugh with you, and you get it, and I get it, and this is the way it is. So I just wanted to make a comment that I found in putting this book together, and that a lot of people, that the divine does present in a way that people can
understand. Oh, sure, and I totally understand that idea that God, I could go on and on about God revealing himself in ways that are accessible to the individual person. I think that's absolutely true. But I want to ask you this. Did you ever find any stories you came across, Jennifer, that there were people who had experiences that actually made them even question some of the faith that they were involved in that kind of made them think, you know what, this God that I was raised with is too small for me. You know, this experience is enlarging my view of God. Did you find that as well?
I didn't find that in a verbal way, but I do know that people said that, you know, the experience they had enlightened them. And when you think of enlightening, you think of the bigger picture.
Right, right.
And, you know, I'd like to mention a couple things. God Stories, Inspiring Encounters with the Divine, just came out in paperback this weekend. So it's very affordable, usually in some places under $10, so that's very exciting. And also, I just got word from my literary agent yesterday that I can go ahead with a book about actually animal stories with the divine. And so I'm collecting those where people have received, you know, confirmation through something, either their pet or another animal showed to them, or it was shown through them. So that's at godstories.com if people want to submit their God stories or their animal stories.
Wow. Well, Warren, thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
We want to get on to some other calls if we've got them. So,
thanks, Warren.
Yes,
okay.
Thanks, Warren.
Bye. Yep, bye.
Thanks.
I'm so glad to hear that you're writing another book, too. That's wonderful. I can just see that that the more people read, probably the more stories you'll get, and the more will spark their imagination for things that, they never even, maybe even didn't remember, and all of a sudden it'll come back to them. Someone on the board is asking, Jennifer, if your book is available for Kindle yet.
It is. It's actually doing very well with Kindle. Yeah, go right on to Amazon and order up.
Right. Okay, good.
What
was your favorite experience? I know you probably, that's like asking somebody what their favorite rock album is, but what was your favorite experience in all of this, writing this book?
My favorite experience. I think truly what, it's been a compilation of experiences, and it wasn't in writing the book, it's in seeing the after effects of the book. When someone emails you and tells you that they were going to kill themselves and that they didn't because they read your book and it gave them confirmation that there's more. When I got an email one day from a gentleman who said he gave the book to a friend of his whose son, 20-year-old son, was dying, and he knew that this would help his friend. The next email came back and said, the book ended up helping the young man who was dying. He's the one who read it, and when he finished reading it, he looked at his family. He said, I can go now. When you're at a book signing and someone is saying, you know, they were recovering, but they can't cope anymore, and they've just started drinking, and then they read the book, and they're back on track. I've been overwhelmed. I've been absolutely overwhelmed by the impact that this book is having on people. You know, it's just that's the best part of it for me.
That would be my best part too, I think.
So I want to make sure I get this right. So I'm going to ask you and what you say as Jennifer. you've got some deals going on with television, correct?
That's right. It's super huge right now, you know, the impact that it's having on people, and I think a lot of people on TV get it very clearly. I was a TV producer, you know, for most of my life, and, you know, I've worked on some proposals regarding the book and everything. We've got right now public television, Georgia Public Television is doing a one-hour TV special about the book, and we're going to be producing that in the spring. We have right now Discovery Studios is representing the book and has represented it to Oprah's new network, which is the Oprah Winfrey Network, which starts up next year. And in the first couple of sets of meetings, we've been getting the thumbs up, and we're in the treatment phase with them. And that would be, if it goes ahead, for a whole TV series based on the book. And on top of that, I've got a gorgeous team out in Hollywood, L.A., of producers and writers who have just loved the book, and they're talking about a dramatic series, and they've been pitching it to a couple networks, and we've been getting the thumbs up there. So, look, you know what? It's the timing is right. The product is good. It obviously is making people feel good, and all I know is one day, you know, about 6 years ago, I said, okay, I've done everything I want to do in my life. Now, give me what you want me to be doing. Give it up, you know? Tell me what you want me to do. And all of a sudden, this book idea comes to mind. And it's been a big train ride ever since. So, you know, that's what's happening.
Be careful what you ask for, right?
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just said, okay, I'll do your work. Just give it to me.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great way of living your life when you get to a stage, and I think a lot of it has to do with age and wisdom, you know, where you get to a stage where you say, okay, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? What's your goal for me? I'll do it. If anyone's listening right now and you just say that, you just go ahead and say that, you'd be surprised at how your life is going to change.
Yeah. You know, how are we doing on time, Paula? What's our time factor here?
We have a little over an hour, Andre.
Okay. Well, I want to, you know, I know you're going to have to sign off here shortly, Jennifer, but I just want to thank you again for being on. You've just been, you know, you've been a real inspiration, and I'm sure we'll, after you get off the air, we'll get more people calling in. I just really, gosh, what can I say? I mean, this is, there's not much, you know, it's one of those, I'm not speechless very often, but, you know, it's one of those, like I said, it's, these things are, these experiences and these things are sometimes too deep for words. So, again, I want to appreciate you being on the air and with us. And again, how can, I mean, people can find your book, God Stories. It's a very simple book.
Yes, it's actually God Stories, Inspiring Encounters with the Divine, and it's a blue book with a big starfish in the middle. You can get it, you know, you can get it at your local bookstores, and if they don't have it in, you should definitely ask for it. But you can also go to BarnesandNoble.com, Borders.com, Amazon.com, and grab it there. It's very reasonable usually on the Internet as well. And enjoy, and then go to GodStories.com and let me know what you think, and submit your stories, because I'm working on this animal book, but also collecting God Stories for God Stories, too. So I love participation. Let all your listeners know, and let's all keep in touch. It's all good news.
Great.
It is good news, and I, you know what, I just want to add one more thing before you go, that it's the kind of book, I want to let the listeners know, that you can pick it up and read it from cover to cover. You can pick it up and just go through and pick a story. You can turn it to any page. They're short, they're inspiring, so it's really a great bedside, inspirational book. It's a wonderful service that you've done to put this all together, Jennifer, and I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you both for having me on, and have a wonderful day. And I've just sent out another alert on our God Stories fan page on Facebook, so hopefully you get some more callers coming in.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All the best. Thank you so much.
You too. Okay.
Thanks a lot. Wow. Well, I want to just kind of build on Jennifer's invitation. Anybody wants to call in, please feel free, because we'd love to spend the rest of the show hearing your stories. Again, our phone number is 646-716-8158. That's 646-716-8158.
You know, and I do understand why people are hesitant to share these stories for many reasons, because they're deeply personal, because sometimes it's a little embarrassing, the circumstances of the story. Some people might think it's, for lack of a better word, smarmy
right,
to share
right.
a God story. I know a lot of men out there that would probably... My good friend Mo comes to mind. He gets real queasy when people start sharing and relating at that level, and especially if they get emotional about it, then that really makes him uncomfortable. So, you know, I know men can get really uncomfortable with this kind of thing. But it's important, because I think it's important to share these stories because it's about God answering prayers. And earlier on the board, I think it was Lou, who said that oftentimes God answers prayers through another person, uses a person to answer prayers. And that's been my experience a lot in life. I think, you know, you pray and then someone calls you and says, you know, I just felt compelled to call you. And they have, you know, they give you exactly what you need, the comfort you need or the words that you need. And a lot of times, you know, we tend to think that because, you know, what we were saying earlier, because somebody doesn't, because somebody has an extraordinary experience, it's crazy or it's satanic or it's, you know, any number of things, but it's not of God. And this is something that always troubles me about religionists and people of faith, is that they don't give God much credit for being very powerful to help his children.
Hmm.
And they give... the devil, or then, you know, they give the energy all to the negative. They say, well, it couldn't be the good reaching out in goodness and love and truth. It has to be the negative, you know?
Well, that's why I said, you know, to warn, I said, you know, look at the fruits of the experience. I mean, you know, what are the fruits of the spirit? You know, they're love, peace, joy, self-control, all those things. Well, if this experience increases the fruits of the spirit in your life, how can it be anything but from God?
Right.
You know,
you have to look, you have to judge every experience probably by the fruit, you know, before you determine. And I can't imagine why the Heavenly Father would answer, would allow, you know, some sinister evil force to answer a sincere prayer. I refuse to believe that about God. I refuse to believe that a child of God could reach out to the heavens in sincerity and pray for an answer, and the Father of all would allow some negative evil force to...
Well, that's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like Jesus saying, you know, which one of your fathers, if your children asked for a piece of bread, would you give them a stone or a serpent? You know, it's
right.
The same kind of thing. You know, I mean, exactly. And you know, it's the oldest trick in the book. You know, people said the same thing about Jesus. They said, oh, you're casting out demons by the power of Satan. You know, I mean, it's the same thing. And so, you know, it's very, very, very common for people when they don't understand something, you know, they'll ascribe it to the devil, and it's very unfortunate. But that's what people do. And you know, as I said before, the fruits of the Spirit don't have anything to do with doctrine. They don't have anything to do with theology. They have to do with, you know, what God is doing in your heart. What is God doing in your life?
Yeah, I liked Boom's story because, you know, he kind of shared that. I'm calling him Boom because that's his name on the board, you guys. It's actually Warren. He shared that he was startled and he shut down. And I've had that experience where something startled me. And I immediately shut it down, and then almost immediately regretted that I did it. And for me, I was at a Urantia conference in Snowmass in 1990, and again, it was one of those things where you remember the exact circumstances of it. I was listening to John Roper relate the story about Jesus and Gannett down by the Citadel when they were accosted by the two prostitutes. Amazing story from the Urantia book. Oh my gosh, it's just so beautiful, so touching. And here's Jesus, who was obviously a gorgeous, handsome young man, and Gannett, an Indian boy who was, you know, a teenager, maybe 17 years old, and they're standing there together, and these two public women come up and proposition them, and Gannett gets angry at the women, and Jesus tells Gannett to stop and says that he shouldn't judge them that way, and, you know, because he doesn't know what led them to this. And so the story is very touching, and I closed my eyes in the middle of this discourse by John, and I saw the third eye. And I know that people who engage in transcendental meditation, and they claim to see it a lot. This is the only time I've ever seen it, and it startled me. It was so...
Okay, what did you see exactly?
The third eye.
The third eye?
Yeah, God's eye. Looking back at, and, you know, I wouldn't even know what it was, except that I had talked to so many people who meditate on a regular basis. And they've, you know, back in the day when I was young, you know, a lot of psychedelic painters and stuff painted it and drew it and tried to describe it. But there is no words that I can even come up with. And no way on earth that I could imagine that an artist could capture it. It was so exquisitely beautiful. And the moment I saw it, it startled me so much that I immediately opened my eyes. And of course, it went away. And I have, you know, I've longed to see it again ever since. But I don't know for sure that I wouldn't do the same thing and just open my eyes, because it's so startling, so beautiful to see that, you know, here is two eyes that look out on the world and one that looks back on the inner universe, on you, that always watches, that is always there, watching after you. Man, it was powerful. So, Boom, I understand how you can be startled by something that you don't expect, and even frightened and shut it down. And I think maybe oftentimes the celestial realm tries not to frighten us. You know, the Urantia tells us that John had that powerful that powerful vision on the Isle of Patmos, and much of what he saw frightened him because he'd never seen those things before and he had no frame of reference for them. And
wow.
And that makes sense to me. You know, how would you describe a helicopter if you'd never seen one? You know, not that
right.
That
although I'm not so sure though that John saw a helicopter.
No, I'm just saying, not that that has anything to do with John, but just as an example, you know, your Rancher book says that he saw what is it that it says he saw the powerful communicational being.
I think he saw the sea of glass and some other things, didn't he?
Yeah, he saw and he described them as beasts.
Right.
But they weren't beasts at all, and so I think that you know.
The four living creatures, I think. And yeah, he thought they were beasts. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And they're. I can't remember now what they were. Maybe somebody on the board can jog my memory and help me. When we see things that we have never seen, or experience things that we have never experienced, then it's hard to come to terms with that.
Yeah.
It's hard to understand it. What's happening? I think maybe a lot of people think they're going crazy too. You know, it's not just what others say. It's, you know, in their own experience, they think, gosh, I must be crazy that this is happening to me. And, you know, I have to say, I'm sorry that Anne isn't with us today because I told her, I talked to her just before, you know, the show. Right now she's on a bus with six imams from the Jordan. And she asked for our prayers. And I said, Anne, I said, I can't believe you're not going to be calling in today. This is your show.
It really is her show. She's got so many God stories. And I want to keep pushing this, but I want you guys to call in if any, you know, maybe for whatever reason people are, maybe they're hesitant. But you can call in anonymously if you want. You don't have to give your name. If you have a God story for us, please give us a call and share it. 646-716-8158. This is every talk show host's worst nightmare when they're trying to get calls and they don't. So anyway, but you know, I think as Jennifer was talking, the other thing that came to my mind is a quote from the Course in Miracles where it says, "A universal theology is impossible, but a universal experience is necessary," and that's really I think what we're talking about here. It's like, yeah, I understand there are differences. I've talked about this in the air before. I know there are differences between religions. And, yes, I still think some religions are more advanced than others. But when you really get down to the bottom of it, it's all about when you start talking to people about their experiences with God, you find out how much you have in common because the experience transcends the theology and whatever theological differences you have. It's like you can – you know, it's like you can, that's why you can have a nice, you know, theological disagreement with someone and then pray with them, you know, afterwards. You can say, you know, yes, we both know what God is like. I haven't really had this experience, but I can just imagine this, that if you talk to people, I'm sure people who are really involved in interfaith can tell you that, you know, and I'm sure you yourself, Paula, can say this, that, you know, you start talking to people of different religions, they can tell you that, that there is, you know, that they when they start sharing their experiences with God, how similar those experiences become. You know, you could probably talk to a Buddhist or a Muslim and you can say, yes, I've had that experience too. And that's the evidence that you're talking about the same God, regardless of your theological differences.
Right, and I think that the key to having a meaningful dialogue with any religionist is to cut through the beliefs to the experiences.
Right.
Say, and then you get to a whole nother level of meaning and value, and it becomes transcendental. I'll never forget having a conversation with a woman at one of the booths. We're working the expos, and she had come up to contend with me about this strange book that I read, and that it's of the devil and this and that, and she wasn't going to let me out of that. I mean, she just kept hammering away and about how wrong I was to read this book. And And I was praying silently, you know, asking the Father to give me some words that would help release both she and I from that situation, because it wasn't serving her and it certainly wasn't serving me. And in that moment, just almost instantaneously, I said to her, I said, you know, you seem to me to be a person of great faith. And she said, and she smiled really big at me, and she said, well, you know, I am. And we just started having the most wonderful encounter that had nothing to do about what we believed anymore, or what we read, or what, you know, or what religion we professed to be. And it was all about our faith. So I think you're right, Andre. You can go.
And you know, I think as you're talking, I'm just thinking, you know, if I ever get into a situation where someone tries to tell me, you know, you shouldn't be reading me a answer, you know, I think what I may do is just turn around and say, so tell me about what God has done in your life. You know, because then you really start getting into what's important, you know?
Yeah. Why bother to stay at the level of beliefs, what we believe about? I mean, the Urantia book says also that beliefs fixate,
right,
but faith liberates.
Right.
You know, if faith transcends belief, you know.
And there's nothing wrong with talking about belief, but the thing is, the point is, first, if the person is really curious about what you believe and they really want to know, that's cool. But I think it's important to you know, always be mindful of, you know, where of your audience and where they are. You know, just like Jennifer was saying, you know, that God makes Himself accessible to us. You know, given whatever faith tradition we come from and that kind of thing. And I think the same thing is probably, you know, I think as we share, you know, the good news to the people, that we make ourselves accessible to them, so that they don't, so that we can. You know, begin on a plane of unity, and not, you know, not uniformity, but a plane of unity where you're really on the same page, and you can relate to that person, and you know, maybe they'll get interested in the Urantia book, maybe they won't, but at least you're talking to them as a fellow brother and sister, and not as an enemy or someone that, you know, to antagonize or be antagonized by.
Right, exactly. And you know, I this brings a quote to mind for me, this conversation we're having, and it's from early on in the book. It's from paper one, The Universal Father, the very first paper of the book, section 4, The Mystery of God. And actually, it's two paragraphs. It's just really great. It says, to every spirit being and to every mortal creature in every sphere and on every world of the universe of universes, the Universal Father reveals all of His gracious and divine self that can be discerned or comprehended by such spirit beings and by such mortal creatures. God is no respecter of persons, either spiritual or material. The divine presence which any child of the universe enjoys at any given moment is limited only by the capacity of such a creature to receive and to discern the spirit actualities of the supermaterial world. And then the second paragraph is, as a reality in human spiritual experience, God is not a mystery. But when an attempt is made to make plain the realities of the spirit world to the physical minds of the material order, mystery appears. Mystery so subtle and so profound that only the faith grasp of the God-knowing mortal can achieve the philosophic miracle of the recognition of the infinite by the finite, the discernment of the eternal God by the evolving mortals of the material worlds of time and space. You know, and the more I read that, those quotes in the book, the more I read that book, the more I realize the difficulty that they had in trying to open up our minds to those concepts. But I'm so glad they tried, aren't you, Andre?
Oh my gosh, I can't even, you know, and it's funny, as you're reading that, you know, for those out there who are new listeners who've never seen the Urantia book, sometimes they come across as very dense and so parts of it may seem very dry. But, you know, they are trying to present concepts that are so complicated and so beyond us. You know, it's like they don't even have the words for them, and so they're trying. The book says that the authors of the book who claim to be superhuman beings, you know, say we are tremendously handicapped. You know, we're by the English language. You know, when you're dealing with the circumscribed language of your planet, we're tremendously handicapped trying to explain all these advanced concepts and spiritual realities to, you know, finite, limited minds. It's kind of like, could you imagine trying to explain algebra to a 2-year-old? It's kind of the same thing.
Oh, yeah, right. And they did a pretty darn good job when you think of it. I mean, and part of the reason why, I got a call from a person the other day that said, this is written at a PhD level. How do they expect me to understand this? And I just had to laugh. I said, look, don't get bogged down. Just go back and read part 4 and then come back and read the rest, because part 4 is written at a 12th grade level. Did you know that, Andre? They've tested it and they've found that part 4 is a 12th grade, more of a 12th grade level, whereas parts 1, 2, and 3 are more of a PhD level.
I think that's probably true. Well, part 3 is interesting because part 3 has
parts
that are much simpler and parts that are more complicated.
Well, we have another caller, Andre.
Okay. Shoot here.
603, you're on Blog Talk, the Cosmic Citizen.
Hey, Paul and Andre. This is Lewis from New Hampshire.
Hey, Lou.
Boom has been on the board encouraging us to call in, so I not unlike Boom, I have a story that I'm finally willing to share. I've never told anybody this story, even though I've written it down. It's a dream. When I was 9 years old, it's a dream where the imagery became really clear to me later, much later in life when I started reading the Ranch book. But when I was 9, it was absolutely terrifying. I'm flying over the cosmos, and up ahead in the distance is this enormous white circle or ellipse of light, and around it are these 7 rings of lesser light, of twinkling stars, but there's 7 of them, and there's sort of paralleling this ellipse, and I'm flying over these 7, which I learned later were the 7 circuits of Havona, toward the light in the center, and I hear this voice, just as clear as a bell. I could remember this dream as if I had it last night. I hear this voice that says, I am God, and this is heaven. And I woke up like a child would wake up out of a nightmare, just woke up immediately, and I was terrorized. I mean, it scared the hell out of me. And even though there was nothing frightening in the dream, it was just such unfamiliar territory for me. And that's sort of the end of my story.
Okay, let me ask you something, though. Was when you had that experience, and you then later found the Urantia book, you saw that experience, you saw the 7... Was it 7 circuits of Havona, the 7 rings of Havona? Is that what you said?
Right.
Okay. So when you read the Urantia book and the Urantia book's description of heaven and Havona, did that sort of confirm your experience for you?
Well, it was definitely an affirmation, okay? And I had to go reach way back and say, oh, my God, this is the dream I had when I was 9 years old. This is exactly what it was. And it was, I don't know. I mean, today the dream remains a great source of comfort to me. But at the time, as a child, it scared the living daylights out of me. And I don't think I ever told this dream to anybody, but I just remember being shaken, just terrorized, woke up immediately. You know, I want to talk about Paula touched on this, about the reluctance some of us had. We've learned this the hard way, about trying to share experiences with those who have not had similar experiences. That's almost an exercise in futility. We often find ourselves resorting to the assuming a posture of self-defensiveness and trying to convince somebody of something who really doesn't have the ears to hear what we're saying. So we later learn to be more cautious about sharing such things, and we learn to not necessarily literally try to describe an experience as much as to suggest the essence of an experience to others who've had similar experiences. And this is where we connect, where the essence of the experience is immediately recognized and affirmed by somebody else, as opposed to trying to, the futility of trying to share something with someone who hasn't had such a similar experience. So we learn to be cautious about those with whom we choose to share things.
You're right, and nobody wants to be judged, and nobody wants to, you know, share something from their heart and soul and have it discounted or poo-pooed or brushed off like it meant nothing. You know, I mean, I've had a similar experience of hesitance sharing a poem because it comes right from your heart, and so you don't, you almost can't bear to see somebody stomp on it. You know, it's
right.
It's a very hard thing to put yourself out there on that limb with something so deeply personal. And but you, I think it was you, Lou, on the board that shared earlier this great quote from Paper One, where it says, "The God-knowing man describes his spiritual experiences not to convince unbelievers,
yes,
but for the edification and mutual satisfaction of believers."
Well, actually, Andre said it first, and I found it and put it on the board.
Well, Andre said it first. I guess I missed that, Andre. Thanks for saying that, because that is so key. You know, that we're not trying to convince anybody of anything either. You know, and in fact, we know that we can't convince somebody who's not inclined to believe in God that there is a God.
Right. And this is, speaking personally for myself, this is something I'm often struggling with and trying to reconcile, is the fact that the book tells us that sharing your inner life and your spiritual experiences is beneficial, and that one of the problems with Judas is that he never shared anything with anybody. He was a very insular and socially isolated sort of person, and yet what I said earlier, we've learned, we sometimes have to be a little careful about those with whom we try to share these things. So the bottom line is sharing stories can be great, but in effect, we still have to live our faith, and it's more by our actions than by our words that people, you know, by the lives you live, they'll mention who you've been.
Lewis, I think it depends on the words that we, on what words we use as well, because words can be very powerful. They can hurt and they can heal. And I think that, you know, I think that if we share a story with someone, a lot of times that's why Jesus told parables. A story has a way of getting right in someone's heart. If we share a story with someone, we can sort of penetrate someone's defenses, go past all those things. And I think that, you know, rather than trying to persuade someone through logic or evidence, there's nothing wrong with having that. There are different kinds of people. There are some people who are going to be touched more by logic and evidence. That's why some people come to the Erasmus book, because it's such an intellectual book. But yet, you know, there are also all these passages in the book that talk about the importance of experience. So I think it depends on what we're sharing, who we're sharing with. I think that we, you know, as I said before, we need to tailor our message to the audience that we're talking to. But I think that when we have an experience like this, it should obviously affect. It will if it's really a true spiritually transforming experience. It will affect the way we live, and it will affect our actions.
So, Lou, yeah, I have a question. I have a question for you about your dream, because I'm thinking back to the show that Andre and Gard did on Jung and the big dreams, and that was clearly a big dream, and you were a boy, and it scared you. But as you've gone on in life and reflected back on that, why do you think that you had that dream? What was the value of it?
Well. Now you're getting into territory where I'm not sure I'm willing to share in a public forum. But I am aware, and even before that dream, I always had a strong sense of the presence of God in my life, and that has only gotten stronger with my scholarship of the book, and. To me it's a flag that we're here to love, serve, and unselfishly minister to our fellows. And it's really all we're called to do. I mean, I have a way of distilling Jesus' message into a few simple sentences, and the greatest truths I've discovered can always be expressed in really simple terms. I think if you were to take the religion of Jesus and put it in a nutshell, you could say this: you enter the kingdom by faith, but the price of staying inside the gates is the continual bearing of spiritual fruits. And how do we bear spiritual fruit? We love, serve, and minister to our fellows unselfishly, unconsciously, spontaneously, cheerfully, joyfully. And I think that's really it. I think the entire religion of Jesus can be reduced to that in very simple terms.
I think you're absolutely right.
And I think the way we bear spiritual fruit is just by letting it happen, you know, by letting God work in our lives. You know, if we're available and we're willing, you know, then God's going to do the rest. And when I say this to people, a lot of people think that they misunderstand what I'm saying. A lot of people think, oh, we're supposed to just do nothing, you know. But I'm not talking about being passive. I'm talking about being receptive. There's a difference. And I think that, you know, I just not from my own experience. I don't have to try to push it. You know, a lot of times, you know, God will give me desires. God will give me ideas. God will give me things to do. So, you know, I think the key thing for me, Lewis, is when you said cheerfully and joyfully, because that's really what it should be about.
Right.
Well, and when you think about it, I mean, okay, the Urantia book gives us a context for the world that we're living on. And it really shows us how our world has been kind of backwards in many ways and downtrodden in ways and despairing, feeling orphaned. You know, a lot of the emotions that happen as a result of being on this planet, this most difficult planet. And here we have this opportunity. They kind of open up to us this great opportunity, the reason Jesus came here, to illuminate God's love on such a stark background of despair. And we have the exact same opportunity. We have the exact same opportunity that Jesus had to illuminate God's love on this despairing planet, to lift people up, to show them their value, their worth, to show them that they are not alone. We're not alone in the universe. We are beloved. To help restore their faith, their hope. That's what the Urantia book did for me. It restored, you know, if I could point to one thing that it did more than anything else, it gave me hope. Hope for eternal life, hope for this planet, hope for my children, hope for the, all that is good and noble and true and honorable and decent. That there is hope. And, you know, that we humans get stuck in our dreary little mindset sometimes. And I think that's what God's story is really. I mean, one of the themes from her book is that we get stuck in this dreary little mindset. And sometimes God needs to thump us to get us out of that. And that's a good thing. You know, that's a service that God is doing for us, and it's a service that we can do for each other. We don't have to show each other where we're in error all the time. I mean, some people are so critical. They just never see any good. You know, and I think the book, there's a great quote about that that says, you know, anybody can come in and point out what's wrong.
Right.
But it takes real, you know, real insight to find what is good and what is right and to actually solve these complex problems. So, hey, guess what? We have another call, guys.
I'm going to hang up now and let someone else come in.
That's awesome. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Bye.
Thank you.
See you guys later. Bye.
Okay.
Thanks for calling. 707, you're on Blog Talk, the Cosmic Citizen.
I guess that's
Hello?
Me. Morning.
Hey,
can you hear me?
Doctor. It's the good doctor.
Hey, Dr. Dave.
Doc.
Haven't
I'm
heard from
the,
you in a while.
But I'm actually in the 661 because I'm in Bakersfield for my 25th class reunion from high school. So,
oh,
but
cool.
I was just calling to listen in. Good morning. I always like to listen in Bakersfield because this is probably the least enlightened place in California, so I figure I can shine my little light here.
Do you have anything you can share with us that's a God story?
Oh, that's God's story.
Yeah,
they've been talking about that.
The show has been about the times when God kind of touched you and something amazing or miraculous happened.
Oh, man, that sounds like a phenomenon, something that's outside of the normal bounds of everyday science as we understand it.
Actually, it's quite ordinary in a way. It happens all the time.
Right.
Well, that's true.
That's interesting you should say that. You know, the story I often tell about something that happened that I think truly touched me was I had my older sister died when she was 25, and I was working the next day or so after the funeral, and I was driving during the summers I drove a truck for a metal yard delivering, you know, steel, and I had this piece of pipe on the back that weighed about, I don't know, it was a piece of cold roll, so it probably weighed 1,000 pounds, right? And I was in this lot, and I delivered some metal, thinking about my sister had just died. She was 25. She was like saint material, you know. She taught at St. Philip's Catholic School. She taught third grade. She'd never done anything wrong in her life, and went to sleep one night and just didn't wake up. And yeah, well, you know, and I had a younger sister that drowned in a swimming pool. I've been around death my whole life, so it doesn't,
wow.
You know, that's probably what has shaped me as much as anything in my life in terms of this kind of thinking. But when I was driving that metal truck, I had this giant piece of cold roll on the back, and I forgot to chain it down when I took off. And it's a round piece of metal, you know, like a pole, like just like a telephone pole, you know, that size of round metal. And I took off out of this lot. I did like a 180. I decided to peel out because I was upset my sister had died. And I do a little 180 in this dirt lot, and then I realized I forgot to chain down that piece of cold roll on the back of the truck. I look back there, and it is still right in the center of the truck, which to this day, I tell you, is a physical impossibility. If you get in a 32-foot bobtail and do a circle in a parking lot with a piece of cold roll on the back, it's going to fly off the truck 100% of the time, and it didn't. And, you know, it sounds kind of silly, but I often think of that as God reaching down and just giving me a little sign. Because as I understand these little signs from God, like what I read in Carlos Castaneda was that, you know, you can call it magic, you can call it religion, you can call it whatever, but it's, you know, it's the celestials touching down on our lives. But after it happens and we can't believe it, we have this phenomenon that happens in our life, but then as time passes on, it seems less and less like it really happened. You know, we start thinking that, maybe it couldn't have happened that way, or maybe we only get one of those signs in our whole life, but it's an act of faith to remember that that really happened and it was real.
Here's a good one. Maybe it was just a coincidence. You know, that's one I hear a lot. And I have a friend who says, Chris Riggio, you remind me a lot of him, Dave. He says, hey, look at it this way. It was a coincident.
Right, things coincide, exactly.
Oh. Yeah. Well, let me ask you about this word coincident, because I like to decipher it. Coincident means two incidents, right?
Right.
Two coincidence. But when people speak about it, they're usually talking about one incident, and it seems to be a coincident with what is the question,
right.
You know? Like, oh, somebody said that at just the right time. What a coincidence. Well, what's it a coincidence with? Like, there had to be another incident for it to be a coincidence. But
right.
I think
and
that
well, I think, but it's also, I also look at the verb coincide. Okay, I mean, I think when people use the word coincidence, a lot of times they I think mistakenly think that that means, oh, it just happened by chance. But there's nothing in the word that would make you think that. I mean, the word coincidence just means that two things coincide. But that doesn't mean it was random or arbitrary. It just means, you know, I don't think the word coincidence. See, what happens, a lot of people say, well, it was just a coincidence. Well, the word coincidence doesn't have anything in it that would make you diminish the significance of it. So
I agree.
Here's
arbitrary, but not without foundation.
Yeah, right. Here's a coincidence that I experienced. And this brings up another set of questions. But when I was 28, my first husband, the one that was incarcerated and actually resulted in me finding the Urantia book, he was killed in a car accident. And he was on his way to work, and I was on my way home. And he worked the night shift. We both worked in the same place. He worked the night shift, I worked the day shift. And I actually got him the job. And he was in a little Honda Civic, which back you guys probably remember back in 1982. Those were like toy cars. And it hydroplaned. It didn't have real good tires on it, and it hydroplaned and slid into the lane of an oncoming big Buick land yacht, and that was all it took. And I was actually coming home, and they routed me around the accident. And I remember thinking, I had the thought, wow, I hope that wasn't Bob. That was my first husband's name. And, of course, then when I went home and saw the policeman pull up in front of the house, I knew in my heart that it was him. And I had a 4-year-old son and a 7-year-old daughter at the time. But anyway, a year later, I went to work in another part of the company. And it just so happened to be the same building that my husband was working in when he was killed in a car accident. And I made friends with a woman there. Her name was Shelley. And over the course of many months, Shelley and I would go to have lunch together and we would talk. And I happened to bring up one day that my husband used to work in this building, but he was killed in a car accident. And she kind of went white. And she said, oh, my God. Was that your husband? And I said, well, yeah, that was my husband, Bob. Did you know him? And she said, well, no, I didn't know him, but I knew the man that used to carpool with him. And I said, oh, yeah, George, from the guy George from Brighton? She goes, yeah, George is a family friend. He has been our friend, a friend of our family, for more than 30 years. She said, did you ever wonder why he wasn't in the car with your husband that day? And I said, well, you know, honestly, Shelley, it never even occurred to me. And she said, well, we have known him for over 30 years, and in the 30 years that we have known him, this man has never missed a single day's work except that day. And I said, what? She said, yeah, in the 30 years plus years we've known this guy, he has never missed a single day of work except that day. And that day he woke up and he was so sick he could hardly get out of bed. And now, when we can say that's a coincidence, and what comes to mind is, you know, I guess someone would ask, wow, you know, they saved this guy, George. You know?
Yeah. Through sickness. No, that's funny. It's in this game of, I mean, sometimes I think that in our lives, like when our lives are done, we look back and every single move we made in our lives, every action we decided to take was either an action helping God in his plan or not helping God. I mean, that really you can break down every action to that, but that it really comes down to your own intent. You know, that if you intend to help God's plan, then anything you do is going to help God's plan, because in this vast world of 6 billion people, there's every action that God needs taken in his intricate plan, you know, that is far beyond human capacity. And as long as our intent is pure, then we don't have to worry about our actions. And,
well, it's interesting. You know, I do think the answer book does say that there is. I think they tell us though not. And don't, this is not to minimize anything we've been talking about today, because I'm all for it, the God stories. But I also think the answer book tells us not to read too much into every experience we have. I mean, there's a place in the book I think where Jesus says someday the children of the kingdom will learn that, you know, that just because you have a strong feeling to go to a certain place or do a certain thing, that doesn't mean it's the Spirit of God talking to you. There are a lot of people I know who mistake their own emotional, I don't know what you might call them, experiences of mania or whatever. You know, they mistake those for God. But if it's okay with you guys, do we have a half an hour left, Paula?
20 minutes, Andre.
Okay. I'd like to share a God story, actually. I haven't shared any yet today. This is one I actually was looking, as you were talking, Paul, I was looking at one of my old journals. This is one that I kept. I wrote this back in 1998, and this really profoundly affected me at the time. Okay, I'll just read you what I wrote here because it's quite a God story. The last time someone expressed concern about my behavior was just yesterday afternoon. A friend of mine called and notified me that I had broken someone's anonymity. Earlier that weekend, I attended a conference for survivors of sexual abuse and their supporters. While there, I met a producer for a major talk radio station. Wow, I thought, I just met another talk radio person in the most unlikely place. We hit it off really well. My first impression of her and her friends was very positive. Before we said goodbye, she asked me not to tell anybody that I had met her there. I eagerly agreed with no intention of breaking her anonymity. But I was also excited and enthused that I had met somebody else in the talk radio industry. It felt like a connection arranged by the Lord. So, in my enthusiasm, I told people, without mentioning her name, that I had met her at the conference. Unfortunately, I told the wrong person. She knew who I was referring to right away and blurted out her name. I was shocked that she knew her identity. I had not even mentioned her gender. Apparently, my friend's family had been involved in a lawsuit with this person. My friend then proceeded to tell several of her family members, and the word got back to the person I met at the conference. Needless to say, she was devastated. Apparently, she called her social worker, crying and hysterical. I've been asked not to contact her since then. I can't even begin to express to you how terrible I feel for any pain I may have caused her. When my friend blurted out her name, I should have played dumb, but I was so caught off guard that I confirmed her identity. I had no intention of revealing her name to anybody or breaking her anonymity. I feel like I blew an incredible opportunity. Not only did I meet a fellow broadcaster, but more importantly, I may have lost a potential friend forever. She doesn't know the whole story. She probably thinks that I deliberately revealed her name and broke her anonymity. I had no intention of doing any such thing. Now I feel caught in the middle of a mess that I can't undo. I wish she could see what I'm writing right now. I wish she could know that this has been very painful for me as well as for her. I've always wanted to be an advocate for abuse survivors. Now I feel like one of the perpetrators. Since I've been asked not to contact her, I can't even make proper amends. If she had an email address, I'd send off an apology instantly. I can't send her a regular letter because I have to dictate it to someone, and this would break her anonymity to somebody else. I thought of sending her an apology on tape, but I don't have permission to do that. I just hate to leave things unresolved, even little things, let alone something this serious. Well, I've been beating myself up pretty badly for the last 24 hours, but something happened this morning that I can only call a small miracle. I got a call from a coworker, a woman who produces my boss's radio show. My boss wanted to know if I would do the show tomorrow. Eager to be back on the air, I said, sure. What's the topic? I asked. Self-forgiveness. I sat bolt upright in bed. I thought forgiving myself for this would be impossible. But for God, nothing is impossible. It was almost as if God reached down from heaven and said, I forgive you. You are forgiven. In the midst of my something, self-criticism, God was offering me the gift of forgiveness and was using talk radio, the thing I love most, to demonstrate it. I still feel bad about what I had done, but I can look at it more realistically now. Was I malicious? No. Did I deliberately intend to break this person's anonymity? No. Was I careless? Absolutely. Did I use poor judgment? Without a doubt. When my friend blurted out her name, I shouldn't have said anything. And then I just wrote this little letter at the end. I said, Dear Anonymous, I can't imagine the pain you're going through right now. As a survivor, your trust has been broken countless times. There's probably nothing I can do right now to earn that trust back. If I could reestablish your trust, I would do it in a second. All I want to do is be your friend, but for now, you're number one on my prayer list. May God's peace be with you. So that was a pretty powerful experience, you know, to get that kind of confirmation of forgiveness, you know, just right, like, you know, it was so blatant, you know.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I think you've read that to me before.
Yeah, I did read it to you once, yeah.
Yeah, and it obviously had a real powerful effect on you. My favorite one that you have told me for years that you have you haven't told me for years, but you have told me that for years you have written these letters to God, and God has answered you, and I think that's a very deliberate way to access God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think Bill and Kay Cooper at one point were going all over the country telling people, doing spiritual retreats and using that very thing.
Yes, that's exactly the method they use, yeah.
Yeah, as a method they use. And one of my favorites like that is the one you shared, and I think you may have shared it on the air, too, about God's answer about your father.
Yes, yes, I did show that on the air. That's one where, you know, God said, you know, your father put you down and I will lift you up, and your father called you names that I will sing your praises. And that was, you know, that was just amazing, because I thought, you know, wait a minute, I thought I'm only supposed to praise God. I didn't think God was going to sing my praises, you know. But that was a pretty amazing one, yeah.
That's kind of a juxtaposition, you know. It's almost like, wow, you know, I hear this all the time. I hear people say, in the moment I asked God to help me, and I said something that I would never say.
Exactly.
And that was something I was
exactly.
going to bring up with Jennifer, because I saw that thread in her book, too, where people said something they never would say, you know. And it kind of startles you. It's like, did that come out of my mouth? You know.
Well, you know, it's that I find for a lot of us, Paul, you know, we condemn ourselves so much, and so we expect God to condemn us, and that's one of the reasons why I know these answers. I know it's coming from God, because I would be much harsher on myself than God is on me. You know, and I think, you know, it's in the Lee Ranch book when it talks about how the angels are gonna teach us to see ourselves as others see us, and to teach us and to know us as know ourselves as angels know us. I think that what a lot of that may be is a lot of that may be, you know, that we're probably a lot better than we think we are.
Well, you know, and I have lectured about the Arantia book quite a bit, and one of the things that I tell people, and I try to give them, you know, I always go in thinking, you know, they may or may not read the Arantia book, and that's okay with me. I don't expect everybody will. I really don't. But I would like to give them, and my prayer always is, I would like to give them something they could keep.
Sure.
And one of the things that I've said a lot is that, you know, I've tried to give them the perspective of the angels as they look at us. What do they see? Do they see sinful, miserable, wicked wretches? Or do they see heroes? And I submit that they see heroes, because this is a very difficult world, and they know it. And we probably don't know how difficult it is, but they do. And in fact, they tell us, they give us this term agandantar, which means one who can believe without seeing, one who has faith, when there's really no reason why they should, you know? And I submit that we are heroes, because we go out and we face this world every day to the best of our ability, no matter what situation we find ourselves in. And most people that I have met try to be kind and good people, you know? I think if this world turned into a free-for-all, where everybody was yelling and screaming and killing each other and beheading each other and whatever else, other horrible things we could do, find to do to each other because we're so frustrated, it would be absolute pandemonium, but it's not.
I think the world is a better place than people think it is. I mean, you know, the book tells us that, you know, that's what they say, you know, when there's so much good truth to publish and proclaim, why dwell on the evil just because it appears to be a fact? I mean, it is a fact, but it's the background, it's not the foreground, you know. And I think that, you know, I mean, I think we've talked about this before about how a lot of people even look at the news media. You know, I think the news media makes the world look worse than it is, because goodness happens all the time, so people don't talk about it because it's so
ordinary.
Well,
yeah, it's not newsworthy
right. Because
it's so normal.
Right, right. And I think there's a great phrase, actually a book called The Paradox of Progress. This might be an interesting book, guesting on the air. It was written a few years ago, but he might still do it. His name is Greg Easterbrook. I think he's editor of the New Republic, but he talks about the subtitle is The Paradox of Progress, why things are getting better, but we feel worse, you know. And one of the things he talks about is how, you know, people get what's called headline-induced anxiety. You know, they look at the headlines and think, oh, my God, the world's good. You know, it's like when you see the a phrase epidemic of school shootings. Well, if it was an epidemic, it'd be happening every single day, you know. And
right.
It's really an isolated incident. That's why these isolated incidents get so much press, because they are isolated, you know.
And they wouldn't be newsworthy if they were happening every day everywhere. It'd be like, yeah, so what else is new?
Right.
I mean that's why they don't get to tell us, you know, well, someone shoplifted today. Yeah, right. So no duh. Of course they did, you know. And they especially don't say, well, someone held the door for somebody else today. Because it happens millions of times every day where humans extend simple little kindnesses to each other. And even though maybe they're down, even though their heart is breaking, you'd never know. Something somebody pointed out to me one day is, you know, don't be angry at anybody. You don't know what they're going through. You
yeah.
don't know what this day has dealt them. You know, if you stop to talk to them, you might find out that they just learned that their husband has a fatal disease, or that, you know, somebody in their life is in trouble or wrong. There's some problem that seems insurmountable, and yet, you know, they're trying their best. And they may not be, you know, cheerful and happy, but they're doing their best. I always think, you know, who are we to judge what other humans are going through?
It's one thing to judge, another thing to prejudge. You know, it's like if you don't even have all the facts, and to jump to a conclusion. I think when you have a fact, you can make a more accurate. You can come to a more accurate conclusion. But
right, and the only way to have that fact is to take some time to get to know.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that you know, we are heroic on this world, and more than we know. And you know, you quoted the Course in Miracles earlier, and I love that book. I don't love it as much as the Urantia book. I have to say, the Urantia book is it really gets me there. But I love the Course in Miracles a lot. And one of the things that it talks about frequently and is learning to forgive each other. And and forgiveness is obviously an overriding theme in the Course in Miracles. I actually think the Course in Miracles is a book that's here to help us forgive each other and to help us have better human relationships. I think if we're having problems with human relationships, it can really help. And in one part, it's talking about how do we see each other. And if we look at each other through God's eyes, we'll see each other as blameless. And you know, I know we could all go on all day about how we've been harmed by other human beings. But by the same token, when I try to look at us through the eyes of the angels and I put into perspective how long they have been around, the Urantia book tells us that most of the cores of angels that are here for at least 10,000 years. At least! That's a short stint.
Wow.
10,000 years. And you think back, okay, let's go back 10,000 years. Well, Jesus was just here 2,000 years ago. Well, a lot of these angels that have been here serving this planet have been here for 8,000 years before Jesus got here. We talk about, you know, we talk about B.C. and we say 2,000 B.C. Well, wow, that was, you know, wow, that was a long time ago. But we're talking about 10,000 years that an angel, a particular angel, has been on this planet. And imagine what they've seen in that time. Imagine what they've seen. They've seen humans go from, you know, barbaric practices and brutality beyond our imagination. And still, they loved us.
Yeah.
Like that great caveman story that you quoted earlier, Andre. Here's this caveman that hardly gives you a picture of the divine dignity of man. He's breathing hate and animosity as he looks fiercely just ahead with his club upraised, right? You got the picture? Now let us expand it. Behind him is a woman and two children, and in front of him is a saber-toothed tiger. And now all of a sudden, he becomes praiseworthy because you discern his motives. But the man is the same in both pictures. Only in the second sketch are you favored with a widened horizon. And that's what they're trying to do for us. They're trying to show us what they see.
You know, I'm curious, you know, it's kind of off the subject, but I'm curious if that passage comes from a human source or if that comes directly from the celestial. I'd like to ask somebody like Steve Dreyer if you might know that.
Would know it. Matt would know it in a heartbeat, Matt Block, because he's done so much research.
It almost seems that, you know, it's regardless of the source it comes from, it is I believe it is how God, as I said in the air, but you know, earlier, it's how God sees us. God has the widened horizon. He has an infinite horizon.
Right.
He understands completely. He forgives because he can understand. There's a French saying, to understand all is to forgive all. And I know some people think, well, that sounds like you're making excuses for people. No, I'm not making excuses. I'm offering explanations. There's a difference. You know, I'm not saying that it's okay for people to do bad things. I'm just saying that there are reasons why people make the choices they make. And once we understand those reasons, it becomes easier for us to forgive. And that's really, if you think about it, that's what our whole ascension journey is about. It's about understanding, greater and greater understanding of people and of the universe and of how, you know. So that understanding, I think ultimately if you completely understand, you know, ultimately the natural result of that is, is going to be forgiveness.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think, Andre, that we're not just ascending, we're expanding. We're expanding to take in all that God
has.
To take in, you know, I mean, if we have a hard enough time, if we have such a hard time understanding each other, being humans on this planet, and we have so much in common, they've discovered that there's only 3% of our DNA makes up for all of our differences, right? And meaning difference of skin, color, and, you know, just everything. Only 3% makes up for all of the differences, and yet we're all hung up on that 3% that makes up the differences.
Hmm.
And, you know, if we have a hard time understanding each other when we are all so similar, what are we going to do when we run into non-breathers?
Right.
You know?
But, well, I mean, we're kind of similar, yet we're different. You know, it's kind of, you know, it's like being in a, it's like the unity, not uniformity. It's like being in a, it really is like being in a family. You know, you have your uniqueness, and yet you have your similarities, and you, because you come from the same family, but you're all unique. And one thing you have in common is that you're all unique. So it makes sense, it's kind of a paradox there. So
once again, your uniqueness you have in common. You know, because it's universal.
Right. How are we doing on time?
Well, we only have 3 minutes, so it's probably time to wrap it up and tell everybody what we're doing next week.
Oh, yeah, why don't we do that? Next week we have an interesting show. We're going to be talking about the two primary social or fraternal organizations that exist to cultivate fellowship among Urantia creators. One is the Urantia Association International, the UAI, and we're going to have Gaetan Charland from Canada. He's going to be on the show for the first hour. And on the second hour, we're going to try something different. I'm going to interview Paula. And Paula is, for those of you who don't know, Paula is the executive director of the Fellowship for Readers of the Urantia Book. And so she's going to talk to us the fellowship and what they do and what kind of projects they have going. So, in fact, I'm going to see if I can get Diane LeBrecq to call in for the last 10 minutes of the show, because she is doing a wonderful, wonderful service this summer. She's going to be doing a Urantia Family Festival in Montreal, which is going to be an attempt at creating some unity between these two organizations, because there's been quite a bit of division for some time between the two. And so, so next week is going to be our little effort, I guess you could say, building unity in the Urantia movement.
Yeah, it's called the United Urantia Family Festival.
Right.
In Montreal next summer. And that'd be great, Andre, to get her to announce that. That'd be fantastic. I think she did announce it when I did a show with her, too, when we did on health and healing. And but she has a lot more details now, so that'd be great.
Yeah. And I did interview her. We talked about this some weeks ago when I was at the fellowship seminar. I did interview her.
Back
on the air, and she talked about that. So
cool. And just so you know, I'll probably stay silent quite a bit while you're interviewing Gaetan.
You're going to be what?
I'll probably try to stay silent quite a bit.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Well.
All right. Well, folks, here we are. We just did another show again, and again, I want to just remind everybody about Jennifer Skiff's book, God Stories, Inspiring Encounters with the Divine, and her website, of course, is godstories.com. The book is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Borders, wherever. You know, it's pretty available, widely available. So I would definitely recommend it. It's definitely inspiring. It's definitely edifying.
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
So, alrighty then. We will see you guys next week.
Thanks, Andre. Thanks for your work.
Thank you, Paula. Okay.
God bless. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. If you would like more information about the Urantia Book, or if you just have comments or questions, please feel free to email us at cosmiccitizen@xnet.com. That's cosmiccitizen@xnet, the letter X, N-E-T.com. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.